Saturday, July 6, 2019. Hopefully you're on your way to the golf course or getting ready to go to the golf course or maybe going to hit some balls or go to a pitch and putt down by the beach, Robert Moses, Nickerson, whatever it be. Hopefully you're playing some sort of golf today. It's beautiful out. And you can go to the beach tomorrow if you have to. But it is gorgeous out there. I was out there yesterday, actually, with a couple of my buddies. It was a tough scene out there, I'm not going to lie. Played with my buddy Roger Reload. We'll get to him in a minute. But it was a great day just to be out with friends. We had the music going and stuff, so that was kind of fun. But Roger Reload, I call him Roger Reload because he's a I've never seen anything like it where he will reload a ball faster than anything I've ever seen. The ball's on the tee. If he doesn't like his tee shot, the ball is on the tee before the first one's even done. It's like almost like his swing is one motion. It's a follow through, hand right into pocket, ball on the tee, ready to rip again. So, but we had a good time. It was good stuff. But let's get to some news and notes here in the Met section. In the Met section, Ina Kim Shod won the Lincoln's Women Met Open. Ina's from Deepdale Country Club. She won by 5 strokes over Caitlin Lee in the final round. Ina won, shot 71-65, so that's some serious golfing in there. In the last round, she had 7 birdies and 1 bogey. So that's really golfing your golf ball, that's for sure. So congratulations to Ina Kim Shod of Deepdale Country Club. Also in the Women's Open, the Women's Met Open, brought to you by Lincoln. Hopefully drinks were on Alicia Debose, who had a hole-in-one on the 176-yard par 3 14th. So pretty good stuff there going on at the Lincoln Women's Met Open. On the Assistance Tour in the Met Tour, Connor Costello of Piping Rock shot 65 and won their event at Port Jefferson Country Club by 3 strokes over John DiPilato of Old Oaks Country Club. In third place was occupied by Nassau Country Club's Nick Beto, who you know just recently lost to in the championship to Andrew Swoboda. So another good showing by Nick, and congratulations to Connor Costello of Piping Rock Country Club. For the Met PGA Tour, Charlie Meisel of Seawinoy won their event at St. Andrews Golf Club. Yep, that St. Andrews Golf Club, one in Yonkers there, one of the oldest in the country. Won by 2 strokes over Justin Barguet of West Point. A lot of good action going on in the Met area and on the various tours, the assistant tour, the regular tour, and on the women's side as well. In the European Tour, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open is a little bit jumping around. It's going on right now at one of my favorite courses in Ireland, Lahinch. Xander Lombard is tied for the lead with Grant Forrest at -9. And then the ever popular Eddie Pepperell and the man with the best hair in golf, Robert Rock, are at -8. And then there's a pack of players at -7. So that's the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. And then on the PGA Tour, the 3M Open, Bryson DeChambeau, the scientist, at -14. Adam Hadwin of Canada is at -12 with a pack of players at 10 under. So that's for the news and notes. When we come back, we're going to be talking with the superintendent of Rockville Links Country Club, Luke Knutson. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The winner. Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined on the line by the superintendent of Rockville Links Country Club, Luke Knutson. Luke, how are you doing this morning?
Good, Anthony. How are you doing?
D- Doing great. I don't know how much of my my intro you caught, but yesterday I was playing golf, and it's actually very timely that you're on the program this morning, because there's two things, first of all, I wanted to talk to you about. The first thing was I played with my buddy who I call Roger Reload, who makes one makes one swing, and if he immediately knows and all that he doesn't like the shot, and he immediately reaches into his pocket before the ball's even done moving, whether it's right around the tees or if it's just like
it's part of the follow through.
It's part of the follow through, right? Just the tee goes right down on the ball. It just made me think. I wanted to ask you, what was the? Do you have like a funny, just someone that you know that you played with that, you know, golfers all have these like sort of idiosyncrasies and these things that they do. I was just curious if there was anything like that you know, that a buddy of yours or someone that you've played with. Golfers do some strange things on the golf course.
Yeah, no, I got a buddy who's follow throughs into his pocket. That's what we always joke about. You know, before the swing's even done, he's reaching into his pocket. You know, that's the one that comes to mind too. There.
Yeah, it's amazing, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But I was happy to be out there yesterday, just playing, and I won't say the course, but we were out east. It was a public course. And, you know, I was playing with my buddy and his two brothers, one of them who happens to live out there. And I just couldn't – it was really a tough scene on the greens. And I it's really a shame what I was watching and what I was viewing and what I was witnessing, because it's pretty gross to the level of how disrespectful – golfers are to the golf courses they're playing. I mean, there's no way. Like, usually I have a thing where I, you know, fix my ball mark and maybe and another one. I don't think I could have spent. I would have not finished my round if I didn't leave. Like, I would have had to do my ball mark plus five to maybe even come close to helping out the superintendent. The amount of neglect that goes on a golf course, especially, you know, in some public courses, obviously, who don't maybe have the resources or the budget, and I get that. But it's pretty bad, and I don't think people understand, particularly on greens, the amount of damage and how long it takes to recover when you don't fix ball marks.
Yeah, no, it's something. If you fix a ball mark right away, it recovers like 100% quicker. I forget what the stat is, but it recovers quicker, better. You know, if you leave it 2 hours, it's, you know, significantly less. If it's the next morning, it might not even recover. You know, it might be burnout. So that's important. But I think the most important thing always is leaving it and, you know, leaving the course in the same shape that you played it for the next person who plays through. You know, whether you replace the divot or fill the divot, you know, rake the trap, fix the ball mark. You know, nobody likes their putt. They think it's going in and it takes a bounce and goes offline or anything, or slows down and ends up just short. So that's kind of the main thing. It's just more of an etiquette, you know, leaving it how you found it for the next golfer.
Yeah, and I guess it just speaks to our society that doesn't really care about the next person coming through.
Yeah, to a point. I mean, at times, you know, the greens are firming up in the afternoons and everything right now, the couple days that we didn't get rain. And, you know, the ball lands on the front and runs through, and then they forget about the ball mark because they go to the ball in the back of the green. You know, you see it all the time when you're out there hand watering in the afternoons and everything. You know, that's why myself and my assistants, we carry around ball mark fixing tools, and, you know, we're fixing them all day out here too. So
yeah, no, it was just I just felt bad because I was for the superintendent, because I know they're doing the best they can, and they were just, I mean, the greens rolled fine for the most part, but I mean, they were just damaged. I mean, yeah. I just couldn't believe the amount of damage that I witnessed, because they were from, not necessarily from the ones that I was looking at, were not just the ones that weren't fixed. I'm looking at the ones that never recovered or haven't recovered, and it was a tough scene out there. I felt bad for the superintendent.
I know it's a tougher year this year with all the rain. You know, you're getting crater ball marks and not really good for rooting. So, you know, some of them are starting to blow up and everything there for a while at the end of June when it was soaked out. You know, it rained all those days in a row and everything. You know, the greens never got a break, never got a chance to firm up or recover. So that's where you're seeing all the burnout ones now.
So yeah, it was a bit of a that was my next question. Like, what kind of heading into the summer? This was how do you compare this spring compared to maybe some of the past? Or are they all starting to become rainy springs?
It was pretty nice to start out this spring. End of March, start of April was pretty nice. It's the warmest we've been in a while. Then May kind of took a step backwards, and was really wet and cold. And I think that's where it was kind of hard, because you were geared up, you're going in April, and then it just kind of flatlined for a while, and then finally picked back up in June. As wet as it is, hard to push some roots in some areas. Other areas of traffic, and then, trying to cut and roll, you may have beat up some edges of some greens or, your normal wear pattern area. So it's a tough year despite, all the rain and everything. Everybody thinks rain makes it simple on us because we're not out there watering. Sometimes, you want that dry down in between. You want that soak, that flush, and then the dry down afterwards, and it helps you do what you can do. But when it keeps going every day and you're just trying to cut grass, sometimes you're doing a little bit of damage just by cutting it.
Well, speaking of water, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you, a couple things about water, but first, we're into July now, and this is marks the 3 weeks, my favorite month in golf, to watch golf, at least, on the tours, and that's because this is the three-week stretch that the European Tour plays the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, and then the Open Championship. And I love Lynx golf, having been to Ireland, having been there for almost 2 weeks and having a great taste of it. I love it. I just loved everything about it. But a lot of people, this is the time of the year where all the sort of armchair golf course architects come out and say that, everything should be firm and fast and brown is good. And, then we saw, I know they did it at Pinehurst for the U.S. Open a couple years back. And, and I get it. But I think what people don't understand is, and maybe you can just highlight, it's not as simple as just shutting off the water. And I know there was an article, I don't remember who wrote it or even where it was, but I know it was something to the effect that it can be just as labor intensive and just as expensive financially or budget wise for golf course facilities to maintain a fast and furious, fast and firm golf course. Can you maybe just enlighten us as to why you can't just shut the water off and say, because it's not all Fisher's Island out there, where we could do where there's very little or no irrigation or whatever may be, but also a very nice size budget, I'm assuming. But can you maybe just talk a little bit about that, about why we can't just shut the water off and make everything firm and fast?
Yeah, well, and the simple one for all the courses around here is your grass isn't conditioned for it, and you don't have the right grass varieties. And then the comparison to overseas into the British Open, it's really the temperatures and the way those grasses are conditioned. A lot of the heights on the greens aren't the heights that we're cutting at. I'm sure you notice that when you're over there playing. It's not managed as tight, but it's also the types of grass. It's a lot of fescues and stuff that can bounce back. They're very drought tolerant. They go dormant, then they bounce back once they do get rain or water. It's really not a fair comparison. And then, overnight temperatures are different. The daytime highs are different. They get a little bit more rain than us throughout the year, most years, not recently. But simply for us around in the area, it's just grasses aren't conditioned. Most courses here are poa-annua, and it shuts down. It doesn't photosynthesize once it hits 82, 83 degrees. It's been upper 80s and humid here recently. You can't just shut it off. That grass is gonna die pretty quickly, and it's gonna burn out and go to dirt on you. So
yeah,
it's not as simple as turning it off. You have to start managing it a certain way, and if you want that course firmer and faster, you gotta be ready to kind of swap out some grasses. You're gonna thin out some areas and then get back some more resistant, resilient grasses in it.
Is it possible for? Could a public course, let's say wherever, let's say that drains fairly well, could they maintain their a public course facility? Could they maintain their current budget, whatever it is, to and be able to do that and say, hey, we're going to do this? Or is it basically just for the most part, impossible in terms of being equal to across the pond.
I don't know if it's going to be possible to be equal to across the pond, but to be firmer, faster, and set up that link style, yeah, you can. It's just, what are you ready for, and, you know, what can your customers, your members, you know, what can they stomach, and what can they look at?
Right.
You know, if the playability is there and it's burnout, you know, then that's what you want. You have to kind of manage that plant health or playability and kind of juggle the two and figure out how far you're willing to go. You know, there's a few days here where it could have been firm and fast this year, but, you know, the commitment there would be fine. You know, most people look at greens. You know, the greens could get there and get a little firmer. You know, the approaches is a good way to get it firmed up and get everything going. You know, I always tell people around here, you know, tell my assistants when they're watering, you know, if a ball lands on the back of the green and holds, nobody's going to complain. But if it lands in the approach and stays there, they're going to complain because it didn't release onto the green.
Right.
So there's ways to manage it. And, you know, you can manage, and it would be a little more labor intensive to hand water approaches and not run the heads and not soak it down. You're going to have to stomach some, you know, stomach how it looks and everything. But it's possible. The budget, I mean, you're still cutting grass. You're still doing everything that you need to. Around this area, you're still going to have to spray. You know, disease pressure is huge around here. That's the big difference of over the pond also. It's not the same disease pressure that we go through here in the Met area. You know, there's a lot that goes into it. And for what we got to do, a lot of the stuff, you're still doing the same. And I don't think it's a huge cost savings just by shutting off the water.
Right. Yeah, that's, and you brought up a good point. That's about what you can look at. It's amazing, you know, that it seems to be that the shade of green is so important to public golfers and what they look at, that the darker, the more emerald the green, the more richer the experience, so to speak, or, you know, the better the facility is, when the two are not necessarily related, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the Augusta syndrome most of the year. You know, you start out the season watching Augusta and the Masters. And, you know, that's what you kind of expect. And, you know, I think you get away with it a little more in the summer. You know, I think the British Open timing and people seeing the brown and everything's a good reminder in July for everybody, too. I'm glad Augusta's not going. You're not looking at that in July and August and having your course compared to it.
Yeah, right.
We've got plenty of brown spots out there around bunkers and some fairway edges and everything like that, too. So it's, you know, it's kind of nice to have people have that reminder that that's, you know, kind of the origination of golf over there and, you know, how it's meant to be and that you can stomach a little bit.
Absolutely. My guest is Luke Knutson, the superintendent of Rockville Links Country Club. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the tri-state area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's tristateturf.org.
Owning the latest and greatest golf equipment makes no difference if it's not fit perfectly for your game. At Mizuno, we create irons and woods for all skill level golfers, from our MP18 family featuring three different models designed for the better player to our JPX family featuring three different models designed to give you distance and forgiveness. We have a model for everybody. Visit Pete's Golf Shop and get custom fit for a set of Mizunos today.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by Superintendent Rockville Links Country Club, Luke Knutson. Luke, let's talk a little bit about Rockville Links. What's been going on over there? I know you've been for a couple years now, been doing some restoration, renovation. Not sure where exactly it all falls into that beautiful little Devereaux Emmett golf course you have there. What are you up to over there?
Growing in the last five holes that we did last fall. We finally got through all 18 holes, kind of doing it in waves, working with Jim Urbina, you know, working off the original overheads and restoring to that original Devereaux Emmett design here.
What's that been? How rewarding has that been for you personally, professionally? What have you learned? What kind of jumps back at you in working with Jim during this whole process?
It's been great. It's been fun. I love the work. You know, I love classic golf. One of the reasons I took the job here is because they were doing the restoration, and I saw the overhead to the Devereaux Emmett. I've worked at another Devereaux Emmett course and done some restoration work. So it's one of the main reasons I came here. Love doing it. I'd worked with Jim before. He's a great guy. I love the vision for the place, and it's been really fun doing it. The property was so untouched and some bunkers were filled in, you know, everywhere we looked and we would say there used to be a bunker here. We'd start to dig and we'd hit the original sand, you know, like beach sand from down off of Jones or Long Beach or something, you know, that they brought up here back in the, you know, 20s and 30s. So it's pretty neat to uncover stuff like that.
What impressed you most about working with Jim?
Just how he ties together everything, the visual of the course as you're playing the course. We're a flat little property and now it doesn't feel too flat, but you know, the way he ties things in and, you know, the little bit of deception that Emmett used to give you off the tee that you now have, you know, it looks like it's a skinny fairway, but once you hit the tee shot and get out there, you know, it's 60 yards wide. You just couldn't see it off the tee. It just kind of how you were originally planned to play a hole and, you know, his understanding of that, you know, that the risk reward, you know, you want to be closer to the bunkers on the right, but it gives you all the room to the left, but you run out of room quick. You know, it just the weird nuances of classic golf and everything.
Can you just explain, that's a term that people use a lot, and I don't know if all our listeners will understand what you're talking about when you say tying in. I know I had a golf course architect on a couple of weeks ago, Ian Andrew. He was talking about his work that he's done at Wheatley, and then he talked a little bit about the work that that was being done at Sleepy Hollow by Gil Hands, and that he mentioned that word tie-in, and I'm not sure everybody understands what tying in means. Could you just sort of give us a little bit of what you're referring to there?
Yeah, a lot of times just so it fits the land. You know, mm-hmm. If you come in and you build a new bunker and there's a bank and a hump on the back of it, and then all of a sudden you can tell that there's a seam there and that it was added on. You know, it's tying it in, making it fit the land, you know, just that extra little bit, opening it up and tying it all in. I guess I just said tie it in again, but making it all just blend and look like it's been there forever and been there that way. But also, as you look across the property, everything looks like it was done that way, and the property kind of was that way. Mm-hmm. You know, this fescue line ties in with that fescue hump and bump back in the distance and everything like that. That's where, you know, Jim would sit there on a tee for about 2 hours sometimes just staring at stuff, making sure we got it right and that it was tying in, and he was worried about elevation of the first mounds of fescue and the elevations in the background so it looked like it tied in seamlessly.
That's amazing.
So he spends a lot of time just kind of on that detail and that visual, you know, so all the visuals tie together. But a lot of things are that the tie-in is if you're building kind of a bunker and it's a flash bunker, you don't want a weird seam where you can tell it was just redone. And you don't want it to look like it was plopped there. You want it to look like all that land was formed at once and it was all soil and then you grew the grass in. It's not, you know, two separate sets of grass and everything too. So
it's so cool that to hear when you talk about that stuff, because I don't think most golfers I think just go out and they play and they just see what's like in front of them. But the fact that golf course architects are not looking at what's right immediately in front of them. They're almost looking to the back of the property as it ties into what you're looking at in front of you because they're all connected. And I think that's, you know, it speaks to the creativity, the imagination. I love, it's not something I possess personally, but I appreciate the fact that these guys are looking past the first 100 yards or 200 yards and looking to the back, you know, part of the property, even though they're staring at the first hole, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, when a guy does a great job and architects do a great job, it's something that you don't notice.
Because right.
It feels like the property is done properly. You know, you don't get that lie on one of those weird seams where it's not tied in between a bunker and what used to be the rough. Mm-hmm. You know, you only notice that stuff as a golfer when your ball ends up there or it gets in your way or it sticks out to you. When it doesn't stick out, that means that the architect did his job.
Yeah, excellent point. Now you're done with the last couple of holes. Where do you go from here if there's anything need to be done?
We've got a few more fairway lines and a few bunkers to tweak, but besides that, it's just getting it all to mature now. You know, a lot of greens expansions, you know, they're thinning a little bit this time of year. You know, they're brand new grass, moved off a nursery that's out in the sun that's now underneath some shade and everything. So it's just, it's getting it dialed in and, you know, ready for the playability and everything that we talked about earlier. It's just trying to make sure everything gets on that level and consistency, but we'll be getting back to just basic agronomics on that for the next few years to get everything right where we want it and hopefully consistent, and, you know, hopefully we tie it all in properly too.
You a big fan of, and you for a long time have the pollinators going on out there. What's the status of that?
Well, we've added a few more wildflower areas and everything for the the native pollinators around. You know, we've seen a huge uptick in with all the natives and native pollinators. So we keep planting areas. Jim Urbino likes it. He likes how it's kind of tied in and that we've used native flowers. So we added a few more areas along tees and some out of play areas. Membership really likes it, you know, having a few flowers here and there. So. Mm-hmm. It's been good. So it's been a good response, and it's a direction a lot more golf courses are going in their out-of-play areas too. You know, trying to add in some wildflowers, you know, it ends up being really low maintenance, and, you know, that's where it goes back into the cost savings we were talking about earlier when you don't have to mow those areas every single week and everything too. So it's been nice. And then we've added a lot more, you know, just fescue areas too, which are kind of maintained natives. You know, they're not necessarily cheaper with how much you have to spray them to keep them thin and everything. But, you know, it's still, you see the wildlife and everything moving into there. It's kind of nice to drive around every day and not just stare at grass and kind of like a sterile, you know, sterile property. It's nice to have those other things, you know, some beehives, you know, some bird boxes and some flowers and everything to look at, too. So it's not just all the same mundane thing this time of year.
I'm glad you brought it up. A lot of people love that golden look of the fescue, and they don't realize how difficult that stuff is to make part of your property. It's pretty labor intensive.
Yeah, it is, especially to get it where you can find your ball and you know, the maintenance wise, so it's playable.
Sure.
You know, deep out of play areas are easy to kind of let it grow up, but to keep the weeds and keep it thin and playable, it's a lot of work, and it's not necessarily cost savings, you know, especially in those high profile areas. We've been lucky to be able to establish a lot of those areas from seed and kind of establish it thin the way I want and everything. So it's been nice to do a restoration on that. You know, some of the areas that we've just grown up are still need a little more work.
Well, Luke, I appreciate your time this morning. I know you're out prepping greens, but I appreciate your carving out a few minutes of your time and in your busy schedule to join us this morning and keep us up to date and inform us and enlighten us. Thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on anytime.
You got it. All right. That was Superintendent from Rockville Links Country Club, Luke Knutson. That's it for this week, folks. Have a great weekend. Enjoy. Play some golf. And please fix your ball marks. Please. Have a great weekend, folks.